Welcome to The Swifterhood,
a podcast all about Taylor Swift's lyrical genius.
Whether you've known from her debut album that she's had a place in this world, or her folklore has become your Evermore recently,
we are here to faithfully and wholeheartedly deconstruct each song, lyric by lyric. Hey, welcome back.
It's been a while.
It has been a while.
And we really appreciate everyone who is tuning in right now because we know we have been slacking on recording. But to all the fans that are still out there with us, thank you for tuning in. And we're really excited to dive into Midnights.
So, Morgan, do you want to explain to the listeners how this season is going to work? Because we've changed our plan from episode 300.
So are you saying, can you ask me a question?
Yeah, can I ask you a question?
So this format has changed a little bit. When Aaron and I started on this journey of dissecting Taylor's lyrics, lyric by lyric, we started with the re-records, and that's what our two seasons have been. So obviously, if you guys have been with us, you listened to Fearless, Taylor's version, and then Red, Taylor's version. And since this new album is her 10th studio album and it's brand new, we decided that we wanted to do it a little bit differently because we have this vibe that it seems to be all of her albums kind of coming to a culmination. And because of that, we're not going to be doing this lyric by lyric like we usually do. We're going to break this up into two different episodes. So it's going to be more of a general vibe that we talk about how it's been sitting with us. These songs have been sitting with us since its release on October 21st. And we're still going to do it song by song, but just much more generalized as opposed to breaking down the lyrics. And so we think this is a better fit for this album. We are including the 3 a.m. releases. So that's why we're breaking it up into two. Next up, we have Erin, because we are going to stay tried and true to our format a little bit, and she's going to do a Fearless feature.
Yeah. So for this season, we had talked about just wanting to support women because, of course, Taylor identifies as a woman, and the song Bigger Than the Whole Sky, I feel like, is such a defining song. Like, it's so deep and meaningful and powerful. So my Fearless feature is just that you look for maternal health organizations in your area. So, like, my encouragement to you would be look up someone in your area that you would like to support and do that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And also, I will take the blame for not being able to record as often. In our last episode, I was saying how Morgan has more availability. Well,
turns out we did a little switcheroo.
In a twist of fate, when it all went down, I sold my soul to the theater. So we're working on Mamma Mia at my school right now, and I'm choreographing for that. And so that means I have rehearsal like every day, including tonight from 6:30 to 8:30. So it's been a little bit harder. So I just want to say I will take the blame for that.
But I do think that this is a good way to be addressing this album.
I think it makes more sense considering we kind of already broke the format with episode 300 just talking about overall impressions. So it's sort of like a then and now.
Yeah. So do you want to start us off, Erin, with Lavender Haze? Which comes at a perfect time since her video was released last week.
Yeah, finally.
I know. We have all been waiting with bated breath.
Like, we all knew that video was coming for forever because it was in the teaser of like the little vignettes for music videos for the album, and we might still be getting another video, we think, because she said,
hold on, she says we, I didn't know this.
Well,
because in her comment, mm-hmm. she said she did, the way she worded something made it seem like there's going to be another one.
This is the first of three recorded videos, right?
No,
this is the first of three videos that I recorded. It was the way that she said it.
Yeah, it was the way she said it. It made it seem like she didn't stop with just the three that we've gotten.
Mm-hmm. So the Lavender Haze music video, if we just want to talk about that in general, that has to be my favorite music video from this album.
Erin has not shut up about this video.
It's so good, though.
It is. It's very good.
It's really trippy. I love that, like, I mean, it's Lavender Haze, so we think she's referencing marijuana because I think so.
Well, you know, I mean, but we know what actually Lavender Haze is.
We do.
Yes.
Which, what she says it is.
Yes.
Which is from the 1950s.
Yep. it's an expression with that moment that you're in love with someone, that you, everything is perfect, everything is great. It's like the honeymoon phase, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we don't really use that term as much anymore. And then we should also mention that lavender is a really important color in the queer community for like a way that people would identify each other. So there's been a lot of talk about that, obviously, as well. But, you know, with marijuana, isn't there one that's like purple kush, or I don't know the exact name. But
there are names for it. And also, I mean, isn't it Led smoking. Zeppelin that wrote Purple Haze?
Yeah, I guess.
And so that's like back in that era as well.
Oh, right. That's right on par with this.
Yeah.
And she's smoking in the video, at least the one cloud of smoke, which looks like the Alice in Wonderland thing.
Well, I think it just goes with the whole theme of her 70s, like, throwback, because that's what people were doing in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's what people are doing now, that every state is making it more legal, or making it legal, but not every state, but a lot of states are stepping up and making it a legal substance. And so I think, you know, she covers the whole like peace and love phase with this video.
Yeah. So at the beginning of the video, we see the cloud over her, which is like referencing Midnight Rain.
Mm-hmm.
And then the smoke comes out from the bottom. The whole thing is just like, it has to be the sexiest or most sensual video that she's made.
Yeah, no, I can't disagree with that.
Okay, good. Wouldn't want you to. She also has the album Mastermind in front of her,
mm-hmm,
with their constellations.
There, you mean Joe and her?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. So that's referencing
Sagittarius and Pisces.
Yes.
The interesting thing is my sun is Sagittarius, but my moon is Pisces.
Oh, I thought you were saying your son, like one of your children.
Oh, no. Two of my children are Sagittarius, actually.
Nice.
But no, my sun sign is Sagittarius and my moon sign is Pisces.
Well,
in case anyone was wondering.
We were all wondering. I have you on the
co-star.
Uh-huh. On the app that you made me download. So I look at my horoscope now. But this could be referenced to, do I have to tell you about the constellations in his eyes, like,
yeah,
later on? The koi fish in this video are important too, because there's koi fish on her guitar during the Speak Now era.
Yeah, I read that. I missed that the first time around.
I didn't remember that from the guitar, and I did see Speak Now. That's one of the ones I went to. But I mean, the guitar is far away. Like,
yeah.
I didn't remember that. But the fishbowl, the whole metaphor with the fishbowl from the Lover music video here. What do you want to talk about? What that was? Remind people the fishbowl.
No, you can do that.
Okay, you're just looking at me like you're really bored.
No, I'm not. I'm interested.
Okay, the fishbowl in the Lover music video is meant to represent how her life is like constantly being analyzed and looked at from other people, and that, you know, Joe got in the fishbowl with her, and she had always said like maybe one day someone will be willing to put up with this and live that life with me. So what's cool
even
about...
Even though she can never give them peace.
Exactly. What's cool about this video is that she literally tears down the walls of the house, and then the fishbowl becomes like her whole world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's super cool.
I had missed that. Thank you for explaining that. Not at all bored, Erin.
Oh, good. And then she's quite literally able to just find peace at the end and go to sleep in the clouds.
I think it's also important to point out that that her significant other, her partner in the video, is a trans guy,
mm-hmm,
which is pretty awesome that she included him in her video.
It is.
First time she has, correct?
I think so, yeah. At first, I was wondering if she was going to repeat, like I said, like try to repeat previous male leads from older music videos, because she's consistently been with Joe.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like she's changing it up and wants to give people opportunities to be in the videos, and she's writing and directing and like doing all of them.
Yeah, it's amazing what a little clout can get her. I mean, seriously, like her, like Erin and I sat and watched videos last week together, and the switch from when other people wrote and direct the videos, mm-hmm, to when she has her input is just so obvious. But it obviously took her a while to get to a place where she had the permission and ability to do that.
Right. Like, I think she was always giving her opinions and taking a lead creatively, but this is like her full creative
right
capacity, and it's so cool to see that play out. She puts so many details, like that's part of the thing that makes me nervous about recording. It's like, I guess I don't have to talk about literally everything, but you consume all this information and then like you watch the videos and you notice things, and there's so many tiny details to notice.
There are, but I think that that's, you know, everyone can read those details and they probably know about them, which is why I think it's important. We can talk about our thoughts on them mm-hmm. and our general thoughts. So what is your general thought on the song Lavender Haze?
You know, when I first heard it, it reminded me of like a Harry Styles album. Like,
okay.
You know, because it's got that sort of 70s sound and he's kind of known for having that. It's actually called funk pop, pop funk.
Okay.
That's his genre, you know, it's mm-hmm. kind of 70s funky. And so I like the sound to it, but it was not a song that was my favorite, like from the get go. Like it seemed kind of like written to be a single. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it's a great opening song of mm-hmm. an album. Because I think it's upbeat. It drags you in. It has a catchy sound throughout. And the lyrics are pretty good, I think.
Yeah. And I should probably mention that we did have a listener write in about this song to talk about, I think it was Grace. Grace, I think it was you. Hello. You may have had your baby by now. But I believe it was Grace who wrote in to talk to us about how some people are questioning the lyrics where she says, the only kind of girl they see is a one night or a bride or a wife. Is it wife?
Yeah, one night or a wife. Or no, sorry. Yeah. The only kind of girl they see is a one night or a wife.
And so she had previously on the Lover album talked a lot about marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And so Grace wrote in to say that it might be more about the ex. I hope I'm remembering this correctly, Grace. I'm sorry if I'm not. But basically, it might be more about the expectations.
Yeah.
For Taylor than like actually being against marriage. Like, I don't think she's like downright against marriage as an institution.
No, not at all. I think that this is just stop bothering me about it. I've been with like, because everyone's jumping to the conclusion. I mean, I think it's clearly everyone that's saying like she's secretly married or she's secretly already, you know, like stop getting into my business. Get it off my desk. I don't want this narrative.
Get it off my desk. Like, come and get it. Like, let's have sex on my desk. Do you hear that line that way?
Oh, I don't. I've never heard it that way.
Oh, I heard it immediately as like, get it off your chest. Like, talk your talk, right? But get it off my desk is directed to Joe. Like,
oh really? I have it as
sex on my get it, like get it.
See, I have it as get it off your chest. So yeah, like all of you guys can say what you want to say. The population, everyone that's looking at this fishbowl, can get it off their chest, say what you want to say, but get it off my desk, meaning like I don't want that in my inbox. I don't want that as my to-do list. That's not something that I want to be part of.
Mm-hmm. I hear it differently. That's interesting.
That is interesting. I'm glad we had this realization.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to say about Lavender Haze?
No, I think it's a great opening song.
Zoe Kravitz contributed to the writing. Yeah. And we see her in one of the music videos, right? Bejeweled, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So it was Taylor, Jack Antonoff, and Zoe Kravitz. And there are some other writers. They're Mark Anthony Spears, Jahan, Akil Sweet, and Sam Dew. All right, you want to go on to Maroon?
Yes.
I'm definitely letting you take the lead on this.
I love Maroon, and I think it was my favorite song immediately. I wouldn't say that it's my favorite song today, but it's definitely in the top probably three. Of the songs on the album. I think first and foremost, we just have to talk about the fact that it's titled Maroon, because I think it's supposed to be a deeper cut of red. So I think that I hear a lot of the relationships that she talks about on Red, you know, specifically probably most of them are about Jake Gyllenhaal, like we discussed in our last season. But I think the overall feel that I get from Maroon is just this, like, she's looking back on what she was feeling during Red, and this is what she is taking from it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And this one was not a go-to for me right off the bat either. I think...
Either. Don't say either. Oh, because Lavender Haze was not.
Yeah.
I thought you said, were saying it in comparison to me. I was like, I literally just said it was my favorite one.
And you told me that like the week of, and I was like, oh crap, I can't believe I missed that. Of course it would be. Because it's really like, it's really nuanced and complex. And that's the kind of stuff that you like.
Yeah.
So, and you are nuanced and complex yourself.
Well, thanks, Erin, I think.
Yeah, it's meant to be a compliment. Like all of the colors we should talk about. So we've got maroon, we've got burgundy, and we have scarlet. Is that it?
Rosé, kind of.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Blush, we've got the word blush. So maroon, do you want to talk about the meaning, like double meaning of the word maroon?
Is there a double? Oh, like to leave, right?
Yeah, to be marooned.
Like, to be marooned, yep. I mean, so obviously, I mean, the song is about a breakup.
Mm-hmm.
And so maroon means to leave.
If you think of being marooned like on an island classically, like what the word meant, then that would be a feeling of isolation, right? Mm-hmm. Like you were left to yourself. So the darker side of red, so to speak, would be, you know, like the scarlet was really bright and beautiful, but it turned darker. It turned burgundy. It turned maroon because I was isolated at the end of it and feeling lonely. And scarlet is also has a connotation of being like taboo because of the scarlet letter.
Yeah. And she even goes to talk. I mean, she brings up the imagery of roses by saying, you know, carnations that you thought were roses, which is, you know, obviously like you can take that as I always picture just this guy standing in a hallway with a bouquet of carnations and she's answering the door being like, oh, thanks. They're so beautiful. And he thinks that they mean something more because he thinks they're roses. But she's like, oh, my gosh, this is so not the type of flower / relationship I wanted.
Oh, interesting. I just always heard it as a metaphor for their relationship. Not quite that literally. Like I see him in the hallway, but I just, you know, it's like you thought our relationship was better than it was.
Yeah. So I think she wrote it to be a metaphor, but I think it also, the metaphor works when you think about it literally.
Mm-hmm. My favorite line, or I think like the best line would maybe be the rust that grew between telephones.
Yeah.
The lips I used to call home.
Yeah.
Because the rust grew between telephones when they didn't talk, and the lips I used to call home can be either the lips I used to call home because they're your lips and your lips were my home, or the lips I literally used to call home on the telephone.
Call home on the telephone, yeah.
So, just brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, and I think my favorite singing is the Screwtop Rosé. That's your roommate. Oh my gosh, it's just so much fun to sing.
It is a blast. Okay, you want to move on to anti-hero?
Anti-hero or anti-hero, however you want to pronounce it.
Well, anti-hero is how Trevor Noah pronounced it at the Grammys.
It is.
Because, I mean, I'm sure you've seen the clip. I posted it on the Swifterhood story. But basically, he's like, thank you for writing a song about my aunties. Where he's South African and
you
have your aunties. It was really cute.
Why don't you take this one? I mean, this is the most popular song off of this album. Obviously, it's the first single. I absolutely love this song. Mm-hmm. It kind of pains me a little bit how much I love it because it is
a single
and it is everyone who doesn't even appreciate Taylor Swift the way that we appreciate it likes this song. Like, I don't think there's one person in this world that I've talked to that does not like this song. Like, people that I would normally not talk to about Taylor Swift with have said, I finally found a song that I really like by her.
Because they can identify with it.
And I think it's just the beat and the, like, it's, she nails it.
Yeah, she nailed it with this song. And we said in our last episode that we were super glad that finally she had a single that was like, you picked a single right. And that's what we had said about this one and then Bejeweled, you know, being singles. But, I mean, she said about Antihero that this is the most vulnerable she's been in revealing her own insecurities.
Yeah. And I just think it's, honestly, and I know that probably a lot of people, it resonates with so many people, so I don't want to like belabor it, but every single lyric just hits so close to home for me. Like, you feel too big to, oh, it's just like, it's just harsh reality.
Yeah.
Pierced through the heart, but never killed. Ugh.
They're really great. Like,
but they're great and sad with an upbeat little jingle behind them. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so good.
So the music video has a lot of symbolism with the different versions of Taylor. And you see how she's sort of like hindering herself.
Mm-hmm.
The word fat was removed from the scale because, do you remember this?
Yeah.
There was like controversy because she put the word fat and people were saying this is fat phobic. I have a different opinion on it because I think, you know, I don't think Taylor's saying we should all use the word fat. Like, I don't think she's endorsing the word. I think quite the opposite. I think she's showing that to say, this is what society called me and I internalized it.
Yeah.
You know, and that was kind of the point of it. She obviously shows a complicated relationship with alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're coming out of a pandemic, so most people can relate to that. You and I have talked about this music video. Oh.
What?
We talked about it the other day. Remember how it kind of like, how would you say that? Just sort of interrupts the feeling.
It does. Like the whole, so the verse where she's talking about her daughter-in-law, mm-hmm. or no.
Where the cutscene is.
Yeah. Where her, where the daughter-in-law is like, they're reading the will and it's funny.
Yeah.
Like in the music video, it's obviously funny. And we understand what she was doing and we appreciate it for her sense of humor. It is a very Taylor sense of humor. But I remember showing it to my sisters for the first time and they were like, why did she include this? Because it does really kind of break apart the meaning of the song. Like it takes away the vibe of the song if you're watching the music video for the song, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's jarring.
Yeah.
And so I almost wish she would have two versions of the music video. Yeah. Because the rest of the music video, besides the ghosts, which are, you know, sheets over them, which is just funny and playful, like, you know, the different versions of herself and being pierced through the heart and like being quite big, this Alice in Wonderland thing where she's this monster on a hill, like all of it can still be very powerful and serious. And so I just kind of wish there was a version where that scene wasn't in the middle, because like you said, I really appreciate what she was doing and her sense of humor. And I think she has a right to, you know,
well, yeah,
make fun of her own stuff.
And a lot of people,
her
you know
own
what?
Problems.
And I think that that's why this is also like really such a brilliant song, is because a lot of people, when they are being open and vulnerable, they tend to joke about themselves and make jokes to lighten the load of being vulnerable.
Right.
And that's what she does with this video, with that segment, is she's kind of like, this is intense. I'm telling you like these vulnerable thoughts that I have that I haven't really shared before on anything. And I'm just going to break it up with this little laughter because I think maybe it's too much, too intense.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would love to have a version without that scene, but you know, there's a lot of things I would love in life. So do you have any other thoughts on Antihero?
No, I mean, I think it's definitely going to be nominated for Song of the Year at the Grammys. There's just no question in my mind when
2024.
Well,
it'll be eligible in 2024.
Yeah. So 2020, but for the year 2023. No. Mm-hmm. 2022. So 2023 is when we'll get the. Yeah.
Next Grammys.
Yes.
Let's just say that.
Yeah.
Snow on the Beach. You want to talk about Snow on the Beach?
Yeah. I really like this song. It has grown on me. It's had an interesting trajectory for me. I started out, because it came off like right after Antihero, it felt, I didn't love it immediately. But because Lana Del Rey makes an appearance in it, which is very slight. You don't really hear her.
Well, that I was going to bring that up. Yeah. There's a lot of people pissed about this. Like, where's Lana?
I gave it a shot and I do like it. And after a couple of listens, it rose really high on my list. But right now it's kind of back down on like probably on the bottom half of the album for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a cute song and we've talked about the lyrics in it before. It's still very clever lyrics and it's just about, it's just about, you know, the general vibe is just falling in love and it's that immediate feeling of, oh my gosh, like this is real love. What am I, how am I going to handle this? Mm-hmm. 'Cause it's like snow on the beach.
Yeah. Weird, but fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
So Taylor wrote this with Jack Antonoff and Lana Del Rey, and you can hear her influence in the lyrics. I think that's the, you know, weird but fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds like a Lana lyric.
Yeah.
I think this song has very good writing. It's very well written. But because it seems to not be based in, like, one person's perspective necessarily, it feels a little bit less deep or like less personal. And so I saw a TikToker talking about like songs that aged like wine and songs that like, you know, rotted like fruit or aged like cheese or something like that. And this was one where they said, you know, this was what I loved at the beginning, but then over time it was like, it just doesn't have the lasting power, I guess, as some of the other songs.
Yeah. I mean, I don't skip it. Mm. I mean, I don't skip any songs. Well, I skip one, but we'll get to that.
What were the double entendres that you and I were talking about?
It's in the second verse. The I searched for Aurora Borealis and then the green. So it's like...
Okay, yeah. This scene feels like what I once saw on a screen. I searched Aurora Borealis green. I've never seen. So it could be I searched Aurora Borealis green, I've never seen.
Yeah.
Or
she's skipping over to someone's eyes.
What?
Green, I don't know. Don't you think it's about someone like green, I've never seen someone lit from within?
Oh, yeah, that's a really pretty take on it. Aurora Borealis green is in like single quotations.
Is it?
Uh-huh. So it's like a... So Aurora Borealis green, there might be different ones of different colors.
Yeah, maybe. Like, because it's the Northern Lights, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So maybe we just don't know about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like the lyrics of it, though. Stars by a pocket full reminds me of catch a falling star and put it in your pocket. That's from Princess Diaries.
Yeah.
All right. You're on your own, kid.
Oh, this is my favorite song.
This is my favorite song, too.
Oh, my goodness.
You know what is so funny, Morgan?
What?
In episode 300, where we read what the listeners would think, they put this song would be our favorite.
Did they really?
Both of us. Yes. Oh. And both of us were like, what? That's weird.
Yeah, no, it's definitely my favorite song.
And now it's both our favorite song.
And it's the track 5.
So, listeners, you're right.
Shout out to you all.
Maybe you know us better than we know ourselves.
Why is this your favorite song?
Okay, well, in episode 300, I told you, I admitted to you, I think I maybe just don't understand it yet. Like, I want to like it, but I'm not there yet. And then, remember, we drove to the brewery, and I was like, okay, Morgan, explain it to me.
Yeah.
And you did, because the structure of it is kind of hard to follow if you're just listening. Like, I don't know how you were able to figure that out, honestly. But then, once you did and explained it, it seems really obvious.
Yeah.
But it's basically like... telling different phases of her life from like childhood and then, you know, singing in the parking lot, like getting famous, like leaving behind. What's she called? Like little Daisy May.
Yeah.
Like her small town life and like getting famous. And then it goes through, you know, like
the best bridge ever written.
Her eating disorder with like she hosted parties and starved her body. That's like 1989 era. And we go through and basically it's phases of her life. And I just wasn't hearing that at first. And now I am. And I'm obsessed with it.
So I think it's my favorite song because, I mean, Taylor obviously has the reputation of writing love songs, and she's brilliant at writing love songs, or not necessarily love songs, but songs about love, songs about broken up love, songs that resonate. But this one is very, very clearly about her. And I love that it's a track five, because it's not a breakup song. It's not a heart-wrenching song about anyone else. This is clearly about her and her journey, and that she finally is realizing that through all of these trials and tribulations, she's gotten to a point and she's only relied on herself. And as soon as she could realize that she could rely on herself, mm-hmm. that's when everything was okay.
Well, The Archer was kind of like about self, but this really does seem like a letter to yourself. And there's quite a few songs on this album that feel like they're a letter to yourself.
But I think The Archer was like still almost like a pre-antihero. It was like kind of taking her, like calling out all of her bad qualities. Whereas mm-hmm. here she's like,
She's processed it.
And she's like, I got to where I am because I kept reassuring myself that, yeah, I'm on my own. I can do this. If I can put myself, like, if I can rely on myself, I will get there.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's just getting to a certain age and point and like realizing, look at all the things I've already been through.
Yeah.
Like, if I've been through all that, I can make it out. And I really like that the nuance there is this juxtaposition between being afraid and still being afraid, but also recognizing that you can, there's hope there.
Yeah. And in her 33 years, she's learned that, because, you know, you think about your first heartbreak, you think about your first time that you got in a fight with your friends in high school. Like, those are such pivotal moments in your life that you never think you're going to get through them. And you get through them and you get through them and you get through them. And people always tell you, you will get through them, but you don't know you're going to get through them until you get through them. Now that she's 33, she's like, no matter what else hard comes, I know I can get through it because I've gotten through everything else.
Yeah.
And I think another really like poignant part of this song is a lot. Everyone says, you know, you can't be in a successful relationship until you've had a successful relationship, have a successful relationship with yourself. And that's essentially what she's saying too, is like, I've been on my own. I've figured this out on my own. So now I can have everything else because I know who I am.
Mm-hmm. From sprinkler splashes to fireplace ashes has to be like the best way to depict the passage of time ever.
Yeah, I know.
Like
running through sprinklers, bonfires, just like
the fireplace ashes are, you know, winter.
Yeah.
So from summer to winter. And then you can just almost, you can picture like moments from her life that we've seen when she was like more on Instagram and yada yada. Like, you can just visualize it so well. But you're right. This bridge is just like,
it's the best.
Epic. I gave my blood, sweat, and tears for this. I hosted parties and starved my body like I'd be saved by a perfect kiss. Like, it's such good writing, and it's just so painful,
mm-hmm.
but in a good way.
But it's like also the best, like, once, like, it's upbeat.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
there's literally a hopeful note.
Yeah, there's like, I literally, like, during the little, right before the bridge, the little musical, what's it called? Interlude.
Mm-hmm.
I turn it up and I like dance every single time in a weird way. My kids are always like, Mom, put your hands on the steering wheel. And I'm like, not during this part.
I think it's like beauty can come from pain. And that's a message that most people want to hear.
Yeah.
We need that bit of hope. So thank you, Taylor.
Thank you, Taylor.
And this is our favorite song. And we're united on it.
We are. Crazy.
And the listeners were right.
I love how it fades into Midnight Rain next, too.
Midnight Rain, like, I think could be a little bit scary if you didn't know that song was coming on, because it's like starts off like really intensely.
I love Midnight Rain as well.
Yeah, I love it too. I think the lyrics get a bit repetitive at certain points, but I saw videos from people who know about music, because I don't know about music. Guys, that's not, here I am doing a music commentary podcast.
Yeah, but we're doing lyric by lyric, not music note by music note.
Sure, yeah. This person was saying basically she breaks the structure because the emphasis is on the first beat instead of, you know, you typically wouldn't do that, or the emphasis being on like the downbeat, I feel like they were saying, instead of like the upbeat.
Yeah, you sent me that and it was a little over my head, even though I did take music throughout my youth. But
basically, she breaks a regular songwriting, what would be recommended for how to write a song in Midnight Rain, with the way she puts the emphasis on pain. Oh, I guess it would be the fourth.
Yeah.
Not the first. Sorry.
What do you think? I think that this is a future Midnight thought that she's having. Like, I don't think that she ever really had this thought.
Oh, really?
I think that this is her, like, fear at midnight that she's going to lose Joe.
Oh, interesting. So, I don't know.
Like, I don't think she fears that she's going to lose Joe, but if she were to lose Joe, this would, this is the song that would be about that.
That makes sense. So, I don't know why, but I pictured this song. Oh, maybe because people were saying that, and I was just like, okay, sure. I've heard it about Tom Hiddleston. Oh. And that, like, you know, there's some talk about how he maybe wanted to get married, and like if that was what Champagne Problems was about, and like,
interesting,
he might have wanted to settle down. It might not have been a literal proposal. Like, some of that could just be dramatized. Like, I don't know that everything is exactly literal.
Oh, no, for sure.
But it could also just be someone who wants to settle down and she doesn't in general. Like, overall in her relationships, she has put emphasis on her career. She has focused on that, you know, and that's always kind of going to come first. And so there's got to be a point in each relationship where it's like, can this really work out? Because my career is pretty big.
Yeah. See, I don't think Tom Hiddleston is worthy of this song. I think,
yeah,
I think Tom Hiddleston and her were a fling, and that was very, very evident.
From the way people talk about their relationship, he was very smitten. Morgan, wow. I'm just connecting this with, I feel like this is how it sometimes happened to you, that people who are interested in you just like immediately want to be with you forever.
Oh, God. I do appreciate, though, this is where our different, like, you and I being able to talk about this is because I don't watch any of those TikToks. I don't watch many of this stuff. And so the thoughts that I'm having are clearly non-influenced, if that makes sense.
Right. But do you think that I'm unoriginal?
Not at all. Not at all.
Okay, good.
But I just think that it's because when I think of it, I don't think of any. I just picture her literally saying, if Joe and I were to end, this would be the song that would represent
I
it.
Consume an unhealthy amount of Taylor Swift media.
Yeah.
And so that's why a lot of times I can't remember where I read something or where it came from. Who knows? Someplace.
It's just
in
your brain somewhere.
It's just floating around. And that's why I could just talk about Taylor Swift for hours and hours and hours. And that's why,
and that's why,
know,
we do.
We had to start a podcast for that. Like, it had to come out somewhere. What goes in must come out. So who knows if that's real or right, but I don't know. I could see it as just an overarching message. I love the feminist vibes in this song.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. So picture perfect, shiny family, you know, but she's on the outside of that. She peers through a window. She's looking through it all, you know. She says, he wanted a bride. I was making my own name, which is, you know, like, usually if you're getting married, you're not, I shouldn't say usually, but the tradition, at least in the United States, is that you take the husband's last name. So she's like, he wanted a bride. I'm making my own name. Like, I'm making my brand. I'm making my career, all of that. So there's just this feeling when you're listening to the song where you're like, yeah, because you're,
I know,
like, he wanted a bride. I was making my own name. And it just feels like such a feminist anthem. Like,
it does, but at the same time, she's realizing that she doesn't have to be, like, she's also reflecting on the fact that it doesn't have to be one or the other. Like, she messed up. Mm-hmm. Like, that's why I think she's like, this is the future. Like, because
she peered through a window.
Yeah.
Deep
and
portal time travel.
Making my own name, chasing that fame. And she's like, I don't always have to chase fame.
Hmm. Well, who knows? I think we talked a little bit about this in the first episode, but like, as far as, does the concept of this album work for you with it being like, okay, well, it's 13 sleepless nights. I said, I'm not sure necessarily. Like, I think, sure, all of these could be 13 sleepless nights.
Yes.
They could be. They are. I also think they could just be songs, like on a different album that.
Well, Taylor doesn't think that.
Does that make sense?
Yes. But Taylor obviously doesn't think that.
Well, I know she doesn't, but I also think, I don't know, maybe it was just a prompt that she went from to start writing the album and then pulled previous songs, like we said. So that one feels like one that was written specifically for this album.
Yes.
Whereas other ones might not.
Okay.
Like they seem like they were taken from previous eras and like reworked. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think Midnight Rain was written for Midnights.
Yes.
Okay. Can I ask you a question?
Number seven.
Are you ready to move on to question?
Yes. Why don't you start with this one? Because I think we have very different thoughts on this song.
We do?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I will speak about it with trepidation because there's a lot of speculation about this song. And we try to sort of avoid that.
We do.
It's been honestly all over the internet. And so
I have not run across this on the internet. So once again, we are faced with that dilemma.
Okay, sure. I think this song is meant to be questioned. That's what I think.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it has a fucking question mark in the question, mm-hmm. in the song title. So that is not too far of a stretch.
I think a good girl, sad boy could be Taylor and Harry. It could also be Carly and Harry. And we see a time period where she was, they, if you believe that she dated Carly, which, you know, Kissgate at the 1975 concert, there's video of them making out. So kind of hard to negate that. But I think it could be read either way because there's a lot of people online who are like, she's clearly established. It's about a boy. I'm like, do you need to be that intense about it? I think it's meant to be left open. For interpretation.
So this is still a song. So I love this song, but it's still a song for me that I am waiting for it to click, if that makes sense. Like, and I know it will because all of her songs eventually do for me. It's just this one's taking a bit longer. Hmm. And I think because I'm missing, usually like there's a aha moment for me with her songs. And this one, I was talking to my friend about it and he pointed me in the right direction. And so I'm kind of there. But how I view this is it is about a hookup. It's about a random hookup that happened and that didn't end up working out into a relationship. Whether that hookup was with a girl or a boy, I mean, like we said, we're not going to say that this is like it's speculative and it's meant to be questions, which I think is what her intent was. Mm-hmm. But I definitely think it's about a hookup that one of them probably wanted more. The mm-hmm. other one was not ready for that more, for whatever reason. And now she's looking back on it, has come in contact with that person again and is like, hey, why didn't this happen? Can I ask you a question? Like, can you give me some explanation? Can you give me some, you know?
This one works really well for the concept of the album, I think, because this is like the definition of ruminating. Like when you're thinking back on something and it maybe takes a negative turn and you keep returning to those thoughts.
And it's like, it's not necessarily that you want the answer because you want to be with that person and you want to try to make things work. And that's why you're searching for the answer. It's like you're searching for the answer to that question because you're still ruminating on it and you haven't come. And that's why I think that this song is brilliant, because that's what I'm still doing with this song is I'm mm-hmm. still ruminating on it. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And she's still trying to figure out with these lyrics, like, what went down?
Yeah. It starts off with Sad Ed going, I remember. It's, I think, meant to tell us that it's in that time period of Out of the Woods, like Harry, Carly time period. Since, I mean, that's clearly being established from the beginning. There's a lot of she, her pronouns as speculation for it being queer. Honestly, my first reaction listening to this song was, oh my god, it's so gay. I was like overjoyed. I was like, ah, yay. And then I was like, oh, it could be read the other way, and I was like disappointed. My first reaction was yay. All right, do you have anything else?
No, just that this is definitely one of my favorite songs, and I think it's because it's still intriguing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Still makes me question.
Yeah. It's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Vigilante shit.
This song is good, and I like, I compare it because it's number 8, which is like, so I just want to, I don't know if now is the appropriate time to bring it, but number 8 on 1989 was Bad Blood. And I think that this vibe, because she did it with Jack Antonoff, is like, this is kind of a, this album is kind of like 1989 in the sense that even though there are sad songs, none of them are actually make you feel sad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, even though the content could...
What? You mean, okay, not 3 a.m. tracks?
That's what I mean, not 3 a.m. Okay. I'm talking solely about this album, yeah. Like how she intended for it to be released, which was the Midnights, not the 3 a.m. tracks. And that's exactly how 1989 is for me, is like, it's such an uplifting album, even though the content of it could be construed as like broken hearts and questioning things at midnight, like the sound behind it, and you know, that's probably Jack Antonoff, the sound behind it keeps it upbeat and lively, and that you just still feel good when you listen to it. And it makes me laugh that this is number 8, because on 1989 is Bad Blood, so it's like, I'm out to get you on number track 8s.
Yeah, I didn't get that, and I didn't think of that. I would be curious to go back and look through all the track 8s.
Yeah,
well, I think Draw the Cat Eye Sharp Enough to Kill a Man,
oh,
has got to be like the best opening line ever. I know. Like in that little clip of her like turning with that dress, that silver dress on, it's just like, you can just watch it on a loop forever and ever, and you're like, ugh.
And I love the I don't dress for women, I don't dress for men.
So bisexual.
I know.
So inclusive. I love it. Okay, well, Vigilante Shit, when I first heard it, like I wasn't processing the story, and then like maybe the second or third time it clicked for me that this is, you know, about her revenge.
Yeah.
And so I love it so much.
Yeah,
you know, I love vengeful, spiteful. Those are always my favorite of the Taylor songs. And so I love this one and Karma so much. But this is just an epic story. So we've got to talk about it because
it's about
Scooter.
Scooter's wife. Well,
so we know from Mad Woman.
Yes.
That Scooter has cheated on his wife.
Yes.
And you can look it up and read articles about that and whatever. I know I have. I don't remember the details. But
what I did not know is that he had some white collar shit going on.
Yeah, you know, his white collar crime. I didn't know that either. Also didn't know he was into cocaine.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
probably
most people in that industry are
rich, older people. Old. I guess maybe not age isn't.
No, watch Succession. It's like everyone in that genre does coke, like, let's be honest.
Okay, well, we really get the details, but it's, you start to realize that, so it seems like Scooter's wife reached out because she had written Mad Woman and said like, hey, maybe I think as well that,
do you think that that's cheating. What happened? Do you think because she wrote Mad Woman that that's why she wrote out?
So in my head, this is how it plays out. It plays out that Mad Woman was written and released, and that, you know, she heard the song and was immediately like, of course people are going to be reaching out to her. Like press people would be like, can you make a statement? Can you make a statement? And calling constantly to be like, can you talk about the Taylor Swift song? Like you're clearly referenced in it. And then if she had this gut feeling, because she said, what is it? Women, good wives always know.
Always know, yeah.
So she reaches out to Taylor and says, hey, do you have proof? Because you were around him at certain points or whatever.
And then is that when Taylor gave her some envelope?
Yeah, so maybe she had a PI.
Yeah.
She hired a private investigator. This is how all it happens in my head, yeah. Okay?
All speculation. Let's just make sure we asterisk this and say this is all Aaron's speculation. But that's all this podcast is our speculative thoughts.
Yeah. But it is an amazing story. So now she gets the house, gets the kids, gets the pride. The first time I heard this, I also thought it was a gay song. And so gets the pride. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but it's
picture
more
me with your ex-wife. So it took, like I said, the second time I heard it like correctly. Well, what I think is correctly. Who really knows? But then at the end, you know, she's driving in his Benz. She's dressing for revenge. And so it's like ladies always rise above. Ladies know what people want. Someone sweet and kind and fun. But the lady simply had enough. So the women come together and realize that we're all stronger when we come together.
Yeah.
And instead of blaming each other, we work together.
Yep.
It's a beautiful feminist message.
It is. Feminist anthem.
Love it so much.
And next is Labyrinth.
Okay, you're going to take the lead on this one then.
Oh, no, never mind. It's Bejeweled.
Mm-hmm. Bejeweled. Morgan and I have been jamming out to this song.
I love this song too. I mean, there's very few songs on this album I don't like.
This one is also very inclusive in sounding bisexual for being Baby Love. And then the shoes, You Walk All Over Me, and the shoes that I bought you, it just seems to be like high heels, like you're walking all over. And then the second part being Baby Boy.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like, you know, we've got options there. Love that about it. Bejeweled, obviously we had the music video,
which was great.
Speak Now is very loud.
Very prevalent. So we know which re-record is going to be our fourth season.
It was extremely in your face that it's going to be Speak Now.
Yes. And I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, you've already dissected it. So we don't need to get into the like details of it.
Maybe not. If you didn't know that and you're just kind of a casual listener, or you're just like a friend of ours and are listening to this podcast because you're curious, you can.
I'm impressed you've made it this far.
If you want to learn more about it, then, you know, you could probably just go to YouTube and type in Bejeweled music video explained.
Yeah.
And it'll go through all the Easter eggs.
Or you can text us and we'll do the same.
Yeah.
We can explain.
And I don't really want to get into that because there's so much to unpack in that music video, honestly. I mean, we could probably start off with just at least acknowledging that the Haim sisters are in it.
And Laura Dern.
Mm-hmm. Oscar winner.
Yes. And that
she says that like 60 times when she talks about her being in the video. Oscar winner, Laura Dern.
And it's like a Cinderella-esque story at the beginning. And I think that this song really resonates with me because it's just about, once again, realizing maybe that you were in like a not great place and being able to separate yourself from that, step out and be like, I'm actually still pretty cool.
I love this song because I think it has so many different ways that it can be read.
Yeah.
I love that shit so much.
Yeah.
So like you can read it, you can take it as face value. And this is why when people are like, I don't necessarily like Taylor Swift and like these songs are just love songs and whatever. I'm like, I don't even really listen to that because I'm like, you clearly are so uninformed about this topic. We can let it move on. But this song at face value could be about a relationship, right? And so she's like, I might forget I have a boyfriend. And by the way, like, I'm going out tonight and I
can't. And you didn't put me in my top five. And so you're not paying attention to me. And even though I bought you these gifts, you're walking all over me.
Exactly. It could be that. And in that case, people were like, but she has Joe. Like, why is she forgetting she has a boyfriend?
Right. No, because these are midnight thoughts, people. Because these are thoughts she's had at midnight before.
Well, first of all, it doesn't necessarily have to be about the time period when she dated Joe, mm-hmm. or is dating Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And then second of all, this song can be interpreted about her relationship with music and being and putting out a pop album again.
That's true. Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
So in that case, it's like, and when they ask, do you have a man? I can still say I don't remember, is referencing how now, even though she's in a long-term monogamous relationship, she can still write these amazing hit songs.
Like number five, that's not about a man.
Well, I would say even like Bejeweled.
Yeah.
Like about going out and maybe that's not where she's at in her relationship currently. Like, you know, but she can still write about it.
Yeah, and I mean, look at her. She went to the Grammys by herself two nights ago.
Yeah, and then I think Joe was at the after party.
Yeah, I think so too.
But anyways, I think like in that case, when I meet the band, you know, I can still say I don't remember. You're saying, well, I can talk about whatever I want in my music.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still bejeweled. I'm still bedazzled. I can still make these pop hits. And the top five could be about being in the top five. Like, it's just really cool that you can read this song both ways.
Multiple ways, yeah. Labyrinth.
Yeah, I'm going to pass this on over to you and let you take the lead.
Why do you not like this song?
So this is for sure my least favorite song on the album.
And I've heard that from a lot of people. I don't understand it.
Well, I feel like it's a better version of, in a way, like a better version of The Archer in the sense that musically, I think the feeling she was trying to capture with The Archer, she did a better job of musically, like sonically. In Labyrinth. but it's still so slow. Like, I feel like you spend most of the song waiting for that, like, drop to happen, and it takes forever to get there.
See, I mean, this song to me is, I mean, so obviously a labyrinth is like a maze. Mm-hmm. A labyrinth is something that you're trying to get through, trying to get to the end. So that's why it sounds like that, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, I don't compare this to The Archer at all, except maybe musically.
Well,
but
that's what I'm saying. Sonically, oh, okay. Because sonically. The Archer is supposed to sound like you're pulling back. What do you call that? The bow string. Yeah, the bow. Just the bow.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it releases. And so, like you're saying, this is meant to sound like a labyrinth.
Yeah.
The way that it is sonically. And I'm saying that I think she achieves that goal better in Labyrinth than she did in okay. The Archer.
And I mean, and obviously it's about getting over a relationship.
Well, I think in general, it can also just be about the fact that every time she's had a breakup, people expect her to just be okay and move on. And then when you're finally falling in love again, how scary that is, because everything's on display for everyone and you've been hurt before. And so, you know, I think the important thing to note here would be like the, I'm falling in love again is like,
yeah.
Oh no, I'm scared. And then, oh, is like the realization of it. And then wait, what are the three?
So it's just, oh.
And then I'm falling in love again.
Yeah.
Because that's full acceptance at that point.
I really love the whole breathe in, breathe through, breathe deep, breathe out. Mm-hmm. And then the break up, break free, break through, break down. You know, everyone tells you take deep breaths, breathe in, breathe out. Like that's how you're going to. But she just, I don't know. I just think it's very, very well done.
Mm-hmm.
This whole song, just at capturing what is going through your mind when you're going through a breakup.
Yeah, and I think, like I'm saying, I think it's that moment also, you might disagree with me, but I think it's the moment not just of breaking up, but of like, it still may be fresh, but you're falling in love again.
Right, and that's why she's scared, is because she's still fresh in that moment of breaking up, and she's like, well, I know how it always ends.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm scared. Like, that's why she's, you know, the whole elevator is how scared I am, because never trust it if it happens too fast.
Yeah. Okay, pass me this back, and I would like to add a new segment
to
season three, which is going to be a short and sweet season, like we said. But the new feature or segment is called Midnight Moments.
Midnight Moments. Midnight Moments. Midnight Moments.
Thank you for making that nice little sound bite. Maybe I'll put some little music in there with it. So the question... That has ruined us all for the word question.
It really has. Can I ask you a question?
Every single time I'm in class and like the kid is a Taylor Swift fan and they say that, then we just start singing the song. Anyways.
Midnight Moments.
Is where I'm going to ask you, Morgan, for each of these song titles, what you think the moment is for this song. Okay. So for example, Lavender Haze, track one. What is the moment for this song? Like, where would you listen to it? With who?
I think, and it's hard to say if this is not, it's probably a little bit influenced by the music video, but I'd say listening to this would be an evening with a bunch of friends smoking.
Mm-hmm. For me, it's late night couch, like all the lights off.
Okay. By yourself?
Yeah, by myself.
Okay.
All right. Maroon.
By myself. In the car. Blasting it.
This is a great shower song.
Okay.
Anti-hero.
Oh, that's like dance floor with all your friends.
Mm-hmm. Snow on the beach.
Maybe like waking up in the morning. Like... what you listen to when you're like kind of groggy waking up in the morning. It kind of has that like surreal feeling.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And weirdly, I would say like a foggy morning or a cloudy day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're on your own, kid.
I mean, this can happen anywhere, but I will be by myself when I'm listening to it.
This song would cause me great pain to listen to if other people were talking.
Exactly. Which is why I'd have to be by myself.
Yeah. It would be horrible.
I literally drive when I listen to the song and my kids are in the car. If they start asking me questions, I rewind the song to start over.
Mm-hmm. I do that when I'm downstairs cooking. I get it. Okay. Midnight rain.
Probably in bed at midnight.
I've been playing this song when it's raining and I'm driving. So I would say rainy day in the car.
Okay.
This is a rainy day in the car song. Okay, what about question?
Probably when it's in my AirPods and I'm walking or running.
Okay.
What about you?
This midnight moment for me is dancing in your kitchen.
Okay.
Vigilante shit?
Oh, that's like I'm in a foul mood. Someone just pissed me off and I'm going to blast that.
Really? This would be like a getting ready to go out song.
Okay.
This is like a get hype song for me. I'm like, I'm amped. Let's get it.
I'm like, fuck everyone.
Yeah. That's what hypes me up.
Okay. It's been a pleasure.
You have any final thoughts?
No, I'm going to save them.
Okay. So we will meet you for episode 302.
At midnight.
Yeah, maybe we'll release these on midnight. All right, thanks for listening.
Bye.